This podcast is brought to you by Epicor Profit 21 ERP, purpose built for distributors. In sports, the best teams don't chase the scoreboard. They set the pace. And in distribution, pace matters. 60% of the top distributors run on Profit 21 because it delivers real-time inventory visibility, smarter purchasing, and connected operations from sales to fulfillment. Don't play catch-up. Set the pace with Epicor Profit 21 ERP. Visit epicor.com/win.
The sun is calling. Are you ready? From beach days to soccer plays, Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen helps protect your family skin so you can focus on the fun, not the sun. With no fragrances, parabens, or phthalates, our mineral sunscreen is designed for your sensitive skin and trusted by dermatologists, pediatricians, and parents alike. Be fearless in the sun with Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen. Shop now on Amazon.com.
Down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with southern hospitality. Haunted murder mayhem tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Punk, and their dog Ninja.
Hey Tracy.
Hey Jerry.
Let me tell you about the latest true crime podcast that I've been binging, Morning Cup of Murder.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
You remember those desktop calendars that would tell you what happened on that day in history?
Yes, I always loved those.
Well, Morning Cup of Murder took that idea and turned it into a daily podcast that now has over 850 episodes that dive into serial killers, cults, cold cases, murders, and more.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Morning Cup of Murder is the best way to start your day because each episode is less than 10 minutes long, so it is perfect to listen to while you're having that first cup of coffee or tea in the morning.
Well, it sounds great, and it sounds just like it's just long enough.
Morning Cup of Murder can be heard everywhere that you listen to podcasts. So check out Morning Cup of Murder today. Hey guys, welcome to episode 299 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy. Happy Easter, Bok Bok.
Now that never gets old.
I hope everybody had a nice Easter with their families today, and we had an Easter bunny in our yard this morning, so that was nice.
And Passover, if you celebrate Passover. Yes. I think that was this weekend as well.
Yes.
Obviously, especially in the holiday time, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all of you, keep us safe every single day.
Absolutely. You guys are angels. We pray for you guys every day. We'll never forget what sacrifice you are making for us.
Absolutely. All right, Tracy. This has been one of those weeks, and it always, there's an uptick around the holidays. It's just the way it is. But we have talked to an extra amount of people this week that are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for us, there is a benefit to talking to you guys that I don't even think you realize. Every time one of you reach out to us, because you feel that we're safe to talk to, or you feel comfortable talking with us, that is a huge compliment to us.
That it is.
And it makes us realize that what we do is worth doing for way other reasons than just entertainment purposes.
That's very true. And even though you guys call us and we listen and talk to you and stuff like that, and it really helps Jerry and I as well, as far as, I don't know, sometimes we need to talk, but sometimes it's just refreshing to sit back and listen and just try to offer you guys any kind of advice that, you know, you're not professionals by any means, but in the end, it helps us in a way too. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but
it gives us a sense of purpose.
And it does. And You know, I hate to say it, but sometimes I don't think I have a sense of purpose. And I mean, I feel that some days, and but you guys really help us out just as equally. So we appreciate you guys so much. And, you know, we're glad that you reach out to us and reach out to the group, our group. I swear I can't tell you enough how much we love everybody in that group. You guys are so awesome. And we're so thankful for you guys. Then, you know, if you feel like you don't want to go that route, there is an 800 number that you could call, and it's 800-273-8255. You can also text at 741-741. They are really great about answering right away and getting back with you guys and all that. So we've heard that from several people. But we just want you to know that we're always here for you. It doesn't matter what time or day or night. Please just reach out.
Absolutely. So, Tracy, tonight's story is, I thought it was one that it's going to be one I bet most people haven't heard of. Okay. Which I've really been trying in the last year to find those stories that most people haven't heard of.
I know you have, honey. You have.
But I thought this one was kind of cool. It's a little different than some of the stories that we've told. But unlike next week's story, which is going to be really different than the normal stories we tell, we got a cult story coming up for you. And this one is gruesome. It's not going to be kid friendly. And it may not be some adult friendly if you're kind of squeamish. So yeah. I'm giving you the heads up, and we will give a disclaimer next week before we start that it's one that, oh man, I just recently found out about this cult. It happened in the 70s, and I don't know why this doesn't get mentioned more with some of the bigger ones that are always thrown around.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you guys. I am not looking forward to this at all. I've seen some of what's happening, and it's very disturbing. So I'm probably going to lose it a couple times, and I don't want to, but these stories that just reach into my soul, and you know, it's just heartbreaking.
And on top of that, that's the story that we're going to be doing at the live show in Louisville.
Yay. So people are going to see me cry in real life. Yay.
So if you come there, you're going to get to hear us do something we've never done at a live show. We've always done a paranormal story.
Yeah.
In five years of doing this.
Yes, so.
All right. Also tonight, after we get through with this story, we've got Kalani Ghost Hunter. Kalani's got almost 1.5 million TikTok followers.
That is amazing. And I love that name, Kalani.
This guy, well, his father's Hawaiian.
Awesome.
And this guy is 23 years old. He has been everywhere. He literally goes to 3 to 5 haunted places every week. Every week.
What a life. Isn't that great?
This guy is so intelligent. I mean, the amount that he knows about equipment, the amount that he knows about the technological side being, but you would think, because he's been to so many places in such a short period of time, you would think he's been investigating for 40 years. I mean, if you just heard him talk, and even more the off-air stuff that we talked about, if you just heard him talk and you didn't see him and you didn't know his age, you would not even come close to thinking he's 23 years old. But he's got a criminal justice background.
Isn't that something?
I mean, he went to college and he was working. I don't remember if this was actually before. Yeah, I think this is actually in the interview. He was working for like a politician in Tennessee as his executive assistant when he decided to just do this full time.
Well, good for him. Man, he is a go-getter, that's for sure.
Yeah, really cool. So you guys are going to like him. So, all right, Tracy. So we obviously spend a lot of time ourselves in the great state of Tennessee.
Oh, we love it.
Be going back there in about a month. Matter of fact.
Yep.
Usually we're in the eastern part of Tennessee, in Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, Knoxville area. Central Tennessee, though, has often been called the belt buckle of the Bible Belt.
I have heard that.
Because this area, obviously, that area of the United States is called the Bible Belt for a reason. It's a very religious area. Has been from, you know, 16, 1700s.
Yeah,
as long as there's been people there. And it's through the years, it's kind of stayed that way. That the Midwest area or Mideast area is the Bible Belt. And because that area, Central Tennessee, is kind of right in the middle of that, it gets called the belt buckle of the Bible Belt.
That's cool. I didn't like the belt buckle back in the old times, though.
With like the ones the like pilgrims had?
No, like when I got in trouble.
Oh, the ones you got hit with? In this area of Tennessee, there are lots of churches throughout the area of all denominations, okay? Even the tiniest of towns seems to have that one small church with several devout members in its congregation. Church revivals traditionally are important yearly events in the lives of these churchgoers. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. I love revivals.
These revivals would typically take place in the summer after the crops had been harvested and the tobacco was curing in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because tobacco was the primary crop at the time the story took place in Tennessee. For those of you who aren't familiar with revivals, they are still really big today in the South and in some other parts of the country, but I know it's really popular in the South. I'm not really sure which religions do revivals. I do know that it's really big with Baptists, but mm-hmm. I know some of the other religions also do them. And I want to say maybe...
Methodists do it.
I want to say Pentecostal, mm-hmm. but I'm not 100% sure, and I don't want to speak about somebody's religion and not know
the facts.
But right. Yeah, right. So I know the Baptists are big, but I know there are other religions that mm-hmm. do it. Now, sometimes the revivals take place in a church, but other times, and oftentimes I should probably say, they take place in a big tent, and they usually last about a week.
Mm-hmm.
These revivals are like regular church on steroids. You have guests come from all over, and sometimes you have guest preachers and stuff like that. You have lots of fiery preaching and a festive get-together with family and friends.
That is true.
So,
some good eating, too.
Yeah. So let's get set up for our story. This story is going to take place in what is now known as Big Springs, Tennessee. Big Springs was founded by a man by the name of Eponeter Carlock.
What? What?
Eponeter Carlock was his name.
What? That could be kind of a funky name.
Technically, it could be Carlock.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Man, that's a fun name.
He first settled there in 1838. He was kind of traveling through the area, and he stopped to, you know, water his horse. He took a look around at the beautiful hills and the fertile valley, and he decided that this was the place that he wanted to call home. So before too long, other settlers established farms in the area. There was an old buffalo trail, basically, mm-hmm. where I guess literally a place where buffalo had worn
Cross.
Out walking.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was eventually converted into a stagecoach route that connected Nashville to Chattanooga.
Okay.
Now, obviously, this opened the door for even more people to come settle there because now you had a way that went straight past it.
Isn't it weird how would you know which way to go? Like, how do you know which way is Chattanooga? How do you know which way? You know what I'm saying? Ain't that weird to have?
Well, because Nashville, if you're in Nashville, Chattanooga would be to the east.
Well, that wouldn't help me none because I don't even know which way would east be.
But see, people have compasses back then.
Oh, that's true.
So they could use a compass or they could use the North Star. And if wherever the star is, you know that's north. So based by north, you know where south, east, and west are.
Aren't we lucky we have GPS? Like, seriously?
Yeah. Anyway, so a lot of people started settling there. And soon the little town became known as Carlockville or Carlockville, whatever. I don't know how he pronounced his name. In 1846, a preacher by the name of A.J. McNabb, he decided that he was going to build a Baptist church there. I don't know if the church that we're going to talk about is the church that he built.
Okay.
Or if there was one built afterwards.
Afterwards.
Because sometimes they would build, like, basically a little shack
uh-huh.
and just hold church there until they could get the funds for a church.
Sure, sure.
You'll see why that comes into play a little bit later, but I'll bring it up when it comes back up. He called the church New Hope. Now, for many years, the locals would come to the church every Wednesday and twice on Sunday to hear the preacher preach about the torments of hell and the rewards of heaven. In the summer, he would lead them on a week-long revival right there at the little white church that sat on the side of the hill. This went on for several decades with nothing really of any need to speak about. Just, mm-hmm. you know, your average, everyday church stuff. But that was going to change in the late 1880s. It was the revival to end all revivals.
Oh, man.
One that's still talked about today by the people in the area.
What? What did we miss?
It was late August, and like previous years, everyone prepared for the revival. That meant that the men made sure that the spring was cleaned out and that the horses were shoed. The women washed and ironed all the family's best clothes, and they cleaned up the house in case they had visitors. They also did all of the baking and the cooking.
But it was hotter than a biatch out there.
Guarantee. On the day of the revival, people came from near and far. Those who came from the other side of the hill, they would stay with friends and relatives.
That's nice.
Those who didn't have a horse or buggy would walk to the service, shoes in hand.
They walk barefooted?
Yes. Footed? Yes, so they wouldn't get their shoes dirty.
They didn't
want
to get their shoes dirty? Aw.
Just before arriving, the women would wash their feet and put on their shoes and use any kind of makeup or anything, mostly store-bought makeup, to primp themselves.
Nice. Why can't they just clean their shoes when they got there? Like, wore them and then got there and cleaned their shoes?
I don't know. I mean, I'd imagine. I don't know. I don't even want to guess.
I mean, it wouldn't be so bad if you could, like, walk on grass or something.
Well, I'm sure there was a lot of grass.
Yeah. There. I mean, I could have done that. You know me. I don't like to wear shoes anyway, so.
So, on the night in question, no one can really remember what the topic was, but it must have been one mighty powerful sermon. Because according to the legend, the rafters of the church started to shake as he spoke of the demons and the terrors of sin and damnation.
What'd he do, summon a demon?
You're closer than you think.
Oh, no.
The more he preached about fire and brimstone, the more real it seemed to the congregation. Exactly what happened next has been disputed, even among those who live in Big Springs today. One thing that is not disputed is that something happened that night. So, the preacher had reached his emotional peak of his sermon. It's as if he made something manifest right in front of the congregation's eye. A loud noise was heard near the pulpit, close to where the preacher was standing. Some said that it sounded like a tin plate of coins had fallen to the floor. That would make a racket.
Oh, yeah, it would.
Others said that it sounded like big log chains that were shaking and rattling. And yet others said that the noise started as a slow and low rumble in the attic. Then a light appeared in the attic. The light floated downwards and landed in front of the pulpit. As the light descended, it took the shape of a barrel. A barrel full of chains. This barrel then started to roll, and it rumbled straight down the middle of the church aisle in between the pews. As it did, smoke and flames shot out both ends of the barrel. The pews began to tumble over as it passed by. People weren't sure if the pews fell because something supernatural, or if they were being knocked over by all the people that were trying the hardest to get out of the path of the barrel. What is certain is that the barrel struck terror in the heart of everyone in the church.
Well, Lord, I would think so.
Outside the church, on the steps, was a gentleman by the name of Clem Banks. He had stepped out to get some fresh air, because you know it had to be hot in that place August inside with a bunch of people.
Well, of course, I mean, they got a flaming barrel coming at you.
He hears all of this commotion outside, and he starts up the stairs to go see what's going on. At that time, the barrel burst through the door, spewing flames and smoke. It rattled down the steps and straight for him. Luckily, Clem got out of the way and watched the barrel go down the steps, followed by almost everyone that was inside the church. The barrel rolled around the churchyard and spooked the horses and the mules. The animals broke loose and they took off, all except for one mule that was stubborn. And didn't say what happened to the mule, just said only one of them stayed. Some of the church members had actually taken refuge by hiding underneath the church's crawl space. And after a few minutes, which probably seemed like an eternity, the barrel then rolled down the hill and disappeared into a patch of woods. Dazed and bewildered, the churchgoers came out from their hiding places, dusted themselves off, and proceeded to walk home. I wonder if the preacher was like, hey, we're not done yet. I don't know.
Jeez, I don't know about that.
Most of the animals had returned back to their respective barns. They were shivering and half scared to death, much like their owners. In the week to come, there was plenty of talk about the barrel. It was definitely supernatural, but what did it mean?
Mm-hmm.
What was the purpose of it showing up? It was generally interpreted that some great sin must have been committed by a member of the church.
It must have been the preacher.
No. The truth would actually be more alarming than what people were thinking. You see, years earlier, a traveling peddler came through town. He had taken a night of lodging with one of the church members. The church member found out that the peddler had a large sum of money on him, so he killed him and took the money.
Oh, no.
He was so overcome with guilt that he gave that money to the church to help build the church that was currently there. The building itself was tainted with blood money. Now, I said earlier that I wasn't sure if the church at that time was the original church or not. Mm-hmm. The research I did on this said that at one point that we're going to get to, that they eventually built a new church, and that church had served 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems like it would be the original, at least of the true building. But if that story is true, then the church must have started as something else, and then that's how that the main church got built. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. So the guy confessed to what he done, to the preacher?
I don't know if that's the case or if they found out later after the church was built, or I'm not really sure exactly what happened. Now, if you think that that visit by the barrel was the end of the story, you would be wrong. It was actually just the beginning of a series of events that was going to take place that the church was kind of the focal point on. To most in the community, the area became the home to ghostly presences, haunts, and malevolent spirits, especially at night. The night following the barrel's appearance, people claimed to hear the sound of rattling chains coming from inside the church. Other passerbys claimed to hear what appeared to be benches tumbling over and over inside. All of this while the building was locked up for the evening. Not long after this instance, another church member by the name of Aunt Dolly had an experience. She saw weird lights coming at her from the other side of the creek near the church. She wasn't the only one to see mysterious lights. Quint Summers reports that an egg-shaped light had followed his buggy along that same stretch of road. After the next Wednesday night service, members of the congregation were heading home in their wagons. Many attested that the stars began to fall all over them. This was not a simple case of a meteor shower or shooting stars. These stars, or whatever they were, they started cascading down all over them, and the ground around them was covered by whatever it was that was falling.
Well, that's kind of cool, I bet.
When I think of it, I kind of think of like a hailstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with it being in the summer and all that. Maybe it was a hailstorm.
Could be, yeah.
But I think they would know the difference between stars and ice.
Yeah.
But anyway, this scared all of the churchgoers and their horses. These events went much deeper, though. These weren't just strange lights and falling stars. Apparitions soon started to appear to passersby. A general dread of the church and its graveyard hung over the community. Several people even had encounters with a headless ghost.
Want
to hear about one of them?
Yeah, sure.
Ed Prater was riding his horse one night. His route just happened to take him past New Hope Church. He was unfamiliar with any of the stuff going on.
Okay.
He wasn't right there. He didn't know about any of this. He just happened to be going by. A headless ghost jumped onto the back of his horse and rode part of the way home with him.
Wait, on that guy that was just passing through his
yes.
horse?
and jumped on the horse with him.
Holy crap!
Ed was so badly shaken up by the experience that as soon as he got home, as soon as he could literally see his house, he jumped off the horse, he ran into the house, and left
the whiskey.
He left the still saddled horse on its own to just run around outside.
Oh my Lord. I don't know how he didn't jump off the horse at all. Oh my gosh.
Others have heard a crying baby when they pass in front of the church at nighttime. It's said that if one walks over to a certain tombstone and touches it, much like a parent would touch the side of an infant's cradle, the crying would suddenly stop. Now, Tracy, not everyone, of course, encountered these apparitions. It was widely thought that some people were just more susceptible to being haunted than others. For example, old Billy Brown. Billy was a preacher and thus a godly man. Old Billy was so sensitive to the spirit world that he would not go anywhere unless he was accompanied by his grandchildren. Billy believed that if he went out by himself, that he would see everything and would be certain to run into some malevolent entity, and that was an experience that he could definitely do without.
I'm sure.
Granny Todd said, "Some folks can see haints and some can't."
Just trying to be a poet.
Granny Todd seemed very wise.
Yeah.
She should work for Hallmark. For 50 years, the little church on the hillside by the springs had been the social and spiritual heart of the small rural community. But the wooden frame building had seen better days. Not just physically, but the supernatural reputation had taken a toll on its congregation and the community.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Did a lot of people continue to go to the church?
I think it really
just went downhill.
Yeah,
after
it really
that.
Went downhill, literally, because it's on the side of a hill. But in 1901, the old church was torn down. A new church was built right across the road on some level ground. It's said that once that last nail was put into the new church, all of the paranormal strangeness had gone. There was peace in the valley once more.
Wow.
And Elvis sang a song about it.
I know, I love that song.
Tracy, it's been over 140 years since these strange happenings at Big Spring started, but there are still many in the area that will not pass that way after dark.
No kidding.
So my question would be, do you think that barrel was the inspiration for Donkey Kong?
It could have been. That's a crazy story.
It is crazy. Yeah. Like you said, it's a little more, I don't know if you could, I mean, there's a lot of paranormal stuff went on, but because it had happened in the church and it happened at a revival, it's almost like, is it more religious or is it more paranormal? You know.
But why a barrel of all things?
I don't know. And a barrel full of chains.
Yeah.
So my question is, I got a couple questions. First of all, so that place was there over 50 years when it got tore down. And I tried to do the math on when the guy started church and all that. So I'm trying to figure out when this murder would have happened, because it sounded like the church was there almost from the very beginning.
Yes.
So, but the guy gave the money for the church, it said, to be built. So I'm just confused on, you know.
The new church or the old church?
No, that was the old church. So he when he killed the guy and he took his money, he gave the money, and that's the money that the church was built. So was that back when the church was built from the very beginning?
I mean, it kind of sounds like it.
That's the way the math kind of works out.
Right.
Then, of course, you never know how true any of this is.
That's
true.
That
could just be the rumor, so that maybe there was no barrel and there was no, you know, who knows?
Yeah, but you know, when you think about the man that killed him, or well, he killed that man and he felt guilty and gave the money to the church. I mean, that's kind of yucky, I think.
It is.
Because you're giving the church money.
Blood money.
Yeah, blood money. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that would eat at my soul. First of all, that I did kill somebody. Second of all, that here I am giving it to religious where thou shalt not kill. You know what I'm saying? It's just too much.
That's why I think, like, when I remember that movie with Denzel Washington, American Gangster, it's like, he's always in church with, like, his mom and stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Right.
But then as soon as he gets out of church, he's setting up a hit. Or
I'm not crazy.
It just seems so funny that like, so many of these gangsters are, like, really religious on top of it. It's like, maybe you don't understand how religion works.
Yeah, no. So. I don't know, honey. That's a pretty wild story.
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, I'd piss myself if a big old barrel come down shooting flames out of his butt.
I'm trying to think of if it was, I'm trying to picture it, because if it's open on both sides where you can see the chains, but then there's fire shooting out of it too. I'm trying to figure out what's keeping the chains from rolling out of it. I don't know.
Lord, just, I don't maybe know. I'm, we could sit here. I'll probably think about that all night while I'm trying to go to sleep. Dang it.
All right. So we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back, obviously, to talk about our t-shirt winners from last week. And I think we'll roll it into something else. We'll decide. We'll probably give away some more t-shirts. But I want to remind everybody real quick, before we take our sponsor break, in 6 days, the Louisville live event, there are still some tickets available. You come see us, Mysterious Circumstances, Justin Rimmel, and Nick and Rob from Brohio. We might have another special guest or so there. Come see it. Tickets are still available, but you better snag them and get to Louisville.
Yeah, you guys come on out and see us. Let's have a good time.
The sun is calling. Are you ready? From beach days to soccer plays, Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen helps protect your family skin so you can focus on the fun, not the sun. With no fragrances, parabens, or phthalates, our mineral sunscreen is designed for your sensitive skin and trusted by dermatologists, pediatricians, and parents alike. Be fearless in the sun with Blue Lizard Australian Sunscreen. Shop now on Amazon.com.
All right, so I mentioned the Louisville show. You can get tickets for that at hillbillyhorrorstories.com. And you can check out our other live events, including the cruise. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it this week because we're going to get to these reviews. We decided last week to pick a couple of winners. Mm-hmm. We did give one of our t-shirts away, and the other one hasn't responded yet, so they might not have heard the episode yet.
Right.
Or they may not have even known that we were drawing for t-shirts because they didn't give their name, so they may not have known. They just left the review. But I think what we're going to do is next week, we're going to do it again. And people who since, because there were some people who got the reviews in and they left their name, and it was after we'd already done it. So we're going to put all of you in from this week who just, or from last week that just missed it. We're going to put you in there too.
Yay.
So this week, anybody who leaves a review, even if you've already left one, leave another review, put your at least your first name and initial. So we can try to contact you, or at least you'll hear your name and know it's you.
Yes.
Do that. And we'll take all of the ones that we received this past week and all the ones this week. Coming week, and we'll put you in for a drawing.
Sounds wonderful.
So there we go. And we'll do two like we did this past week.
Yes. Yahooey.
Hi, Tracy. So what do you got so far this week?
All right. Well, so far this week, I have got Jason B., Derek Bowen, Mojo Lobster, Amber T-Girl, Amanda, I did it again. Oh, my gosh. Amanda from PA. Sorry, Amanda. Nate Sherman, Mindy from Missouri, Courtney Hinyon, Ethan Rice, Mike MacArthur, Augusto Caesar Hunt, and Brenda. Yay!
Yeah, it was a good week for reviews.
It was. Yes, it was. Our Patreons are Rena Kay and Tammy Goodell. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate y'all so much. I was going to ask, should we put like the Patreons too? We could, or
maybe we'll do that at a later time.
Okay, you want to do that? Because I think we got some cool stuff we're going to come up with, and we'll let you guys in on after we got everything worked out. So,
yeah, we're working on something for you guys. The only problem with the Patreon thing is, like, if you're already a Patreon supporter, it's like, what do? You don't re-up to Patreon. We're like, you can leave a new review, and if you've already left a review. So it makes it harder to try to figure out, you know, and you don't want to leave out people who already are patrons.
Well, that's true. We'll figure it out. We'll have it. We'll get something fixed out there for you guys. So, but thank you guys so much for your views. You are so kind.
We were giving a t-shirt away every month on Patreon, just amongst our Patreon supporters, and Patreon told us we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
We can technically still do it, but we can't list it on Patreon as a gift.
Oh.
Technically.
I don't know why they can tell us what we can and can't do.
Because they said legally we can't just give away something to Patreon supporters. You have to open it up to everybody.
Okay. Well, we kind of are opening it up to everybody, right? So, bite me, Patreon.
All right. So, we're going to listen to Kalani Ghost Hunter. And he's got some really cool stories, but I think you're going to be impressed with this young man. Hey guys, I'm excited. Every once in a while, we have that guest on that leads to other guests. And we had Johan on from Honda, Kentucky a few months back. And he sent me a message and said, hey, here's somebody that you might want to talk to. And lo and behold, it was somebody that I was aware of, but never even thought I could get on the show. Kalani Ghost Hunter is nice enough to join us tonight. And thank you so much for coming on with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Johan's a good friend of mine, and he had nothing but good things to say. So I was excited for the opportunity.
And some of you probably know who Kalani is, and some of you may not, because it really depends on what you're used to seeing. Like, if you're really into the TikTok world, you probably know who he is because he has 1.3 million followers, constantly putting out videos from every haunted place you could think of. And Kalani, this is what you do. You travel around the country and just shoot video after video. Like you were telling me before we actually came on, tell everybody where you were just last week.
Yeah. So, you know, last week we wrapped up Fairfield County Infirmary, Madison Seminary, Greenville Manor, and Posttown School, literally all in like an 8-day period.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, people talk about how busy Tracy and I are, but I mean, that's nothing compared to the amount of traveling that you do to get these things done. And, you know, like I said, people can go to Kalani Ghost Hunter on TikTok and see stuff, but what's the other social media that you're on right now as far as being able to watch your stuff?
So YouTube, I've actually started producing full episodes that have a lot more of the history and interviews from either the owner or somebody very knowledgeable of the locations. And I'm planning on doing that for everywhere I go. So normally what kind of got me started was live streaming. But with live streaming, you lose a lot of that history and interviews and stuff, even if you put them in there. You know, if something were to happen where I can't get that footage back, then it's kind of lost. So pretty much every location I go to now, I do live streaming and a post-produced video. So YouTube would probably be the best secondary option to watch the content.
And when you go to these locations, are you going primarily by yourself or what's the size crew that you travel with to get this done the appropriate way?
So when I first started, when it was strictly live streaming, it was usually just me. Not because of any other reason other than, you know, if you've been with a large group on an investigation, you know, it's very hard to kind of determine if something's evidence or if it's just pollution because, you know, people talk, people whisper, stomachs gurgle. You know, it's just so hard to actually get down and see if you're getting evidence or if you're just getting, like I said, pollution. So that was one reason I wanted to start alone. And it's also a tagline when you're like, you know, I'm at, you know, this location alone. People are like, wait a minute, did this guy just say he's here alone? Which, you know, because we're used to watching shows and, you know, they've got a whole crew, you know, whoever they have in the show. It's not often you see somebody just somewhere alone. Now, with me switching to post-producing something afterwards, I had to add an additional person just to film me doing it. So Johan's actually been doing a lot of my camera work for me at some of these locations. So now I'm up to a two-person team compared to my one-person team.
Yeah, it probably makes it a little easier to have a bigger crew when you got the budget some of those shows have.
Absolutely.
So, like a lot of these locations you go to, like say the four or five that you went to last week, do they usually make you pay for the investigation or do they usually invite you in for the publicity?
Now it has changed a little bit, but a lot of the locations I still have to pay. Now, sometimes that amount may be reduced, but what's actually been even more kind of confusing to me is some locations will actually charge me more. I'm not going to name drop people, but there was a few locations that I've actually reached out to. And once they figure out about the size following that you have, they essentially put you in this box and they say, well, because you have so many followers, you're either going to A, have to let us collaborate and be in your video, or B, you have to pay us an additional fee, which has been anywhere from $150 to $1,000 on top of the location price.
Now, is that a deal breaker in some cases?
It is because, you know, in my eyes, especially one of these locations was brand new. I mean, hasn't even been open for more than 2 months. So they obviously don't really have the track record to show of any activity or any, you know, what to expect. So in my eyes, that would be somewhere you'd want somebody to come in and bring more eyes to your location so that you can start filling the calendar. But it was kind of quite the opposite, where they made it so much more stricter on me because I live streamed. And I was like, you know, there's thousands of other locations I could go to. I'm not going to break my back to do this for you. So I still pay for most of them, don't get me wrong, but it is kind of shifting to either like a reduced rate, or people will invite me in, or, you know, well, you do this for us, you do an event for us, and we'll give you the location for whatever. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot more play now than there was in the beginning, but a lot of them still want that money, which I understand.
Sure. How far in advance do you usually have these things set up? Like the three or four you went to last week, did you know you were going there 4 months ago?
No, usually this sounds crazy, but my planning is usually only about 2 weeks out. Now, the only time I don't stick to that is if it's a bigger location that I know I have to essentially plan in advance. So like two examples that come to mind right now, June, I'm going to Trans-Allegheny, and July, I'm going to Pennhurst. Those are just two locations that you kind of have to plan out because they're so sought after. Even on weekday events, it's kind of hard to get into those if you plan so after the fact.
Pennhurst is absolutely awesome if you've never been there. We got to go a couple of years ago. We had kind of a private tour. It was during their Halloween season. And we were able to come during the day and got to see all the buildings that were available to see. And they pretty much just said, hey, go and look around and let us know when you're done. So we didn't even have a tour. A guided tour. We just kind of went on our own. And, man, what an awesome place. So I'm sure you'll have plenty of luck out there.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one in Trans-Allegheny. They're not cheap. Trans-Allegheny, I think, was right at $2,000. But, you know, there's some phenomenal locations out there. And, like, what's crazy is, I don't mean to steer off, but the place I just went to, Greenville Manor in Pennsylvania, it's not very big. It's relatively affordable as well right now. But I have never in my life had the amount of activity I had there in one night anywhere. And I don't really say things like that, but I had a camera get ripped off the ceiling. I had a door slam behind me. When you think of like Hollywood movies with stuff actually moving, that poltergeist activity that's so few and far between that we actually get to experience, it was rolling in that house. And Johan was with me. Johan was ready to retire that night. So that place is insane.
We had an experience like that a couple of weekends ago at Whispers Estate up in Indiana. I mean, we had balls get knocked off of the bed three or four times. We had a door open. We had flashlights going off and on cue. I mean, I've never experienced that much in one place. And all that happened within like the first 2 hours we were there. It was amazing.
And I don't know if it happened to you, but that was similar to us because I had my music box going off, flashlights, like everything. And then all of a sudden it hit about 4 o'clock in the morning, and then it was just silent. Like there was nothing else. It kind of just, and it comes in waves always, but it was definitely like whatever was there used all of its energy in the beginning, and then by the time we got to the end, it's like, all right, I'm done, you guys get out of here.
I was talking to Annie Weebs a couple of nights ago, and she was talking about Whispers. And then but she also went to the old hospital on College Hill in West Virginia, and we're going to be doing a live event there in August, but she's had a chance to already go check it out. And she said that they had a lot of stuff happen the first couple hours they were there, and then it died off. And her theory was that places like that, that's still fairly new, that hadn't been investigated a ton, that they think that the spirits are so anxious that they pretty much, like you said, they use all their energy at the very beginning, and the rest of the night's kind of dead, so to speak.
Yeah, College Hill, I've been there, probably four times now. I have a really good relationship with the two owners there, really good people. But yeah, I will say for there, it's very similar too. It's like when the night first starts, you'll start getting stuff, and then it just completely dies out. And that may be a good theory, because, you know, a lot of these places, I will say the places I get the best activity in terms of something that really opens my eyes and gets the blood pumping, are places that have not been quote unquote tapped as much. You know, because I've been to Waverly a few times, and even with Waverly, it's almost like the only interaction you're going to get there is whatever they actually want to give you because of how many people go in and out of that building.
That's true.
So, you know, I've been to the biggest, I've been to the smallest, but I definitely can see a trend where smaller locations that have not been investigated nearly as much seem to have a lot better activity in terms of that physical stuff.
What are a handful of your favorite places to go that you've had, like you just discussed a while ago, having the place up in Pennsylvania, having all the activity? What are some of the other places that you've just been blown away by? What kind of activity you had?
So Post Town's interesting because we've actually had locker doors open and close, and I actually had a door open on me there on camera on live stream. So Post Town had quite a bit of activity for me, but again, I tell people all the time, you know, it's very similar to fishing in the sense of you can have the most expensive boat, most expensive rods, the best spot, but you can go one day and catch absolutely nothing. And, you know, even with my hot spot locations, that's kind of how I feel because I was just at Post Town. It was very quiet. We did a little table tipping and got some stuff going. But, you know, Post Town's one. But what actually got me into the paranormal is when I was 11, I was at the Shiloh Battlefield in Tennessee, which I don't know if you've ever been to the Shiloh Battlefield, but they have one spot called the Bloody Pond, which, because of how much iron is still left in it has that reddish tint from all the blood that was in the water. But I was on a Boy Scout camp out running in the woods with my buddy at 3 a.m. up to no good, like any young adult would be doing. And I actually saw a Civil War drummer boy, and it looked so real to me that I thought it was a reenactor. So I spoke to this drummer boy, and it turned around, and it was real dirty, or he was real dirty, I should say. And his English was weird. Like, I couldn't process, like, I could tell what he was saying, but it sounded like he was talking to me in a weird accent. And I was like, what are you doing out here? And he goes, have you seen my platoon? And I'm like, no. Like, I thought he was the reenactor because the next day was when the reenactment started. Anyways, he goes, y'all be safe out here. And he's walking by us. And as he walks, we turned around, and then I just watch him just evaporate into the air. And I looked at my buddy just to make sure that I wasn't, you know, imagining this. And he looked at me, and then we just took off and went to sleep. So that was where my interest essentially, like, started. So Shiloh, any battlefield, I love battlefields. Gettysburg has that feeling, the moment you walk onto the ground, it's like it's charged just from everything that had gone on there. So I love battlefields, Gettysburg. Now you can't really investigate these places. They're very, very particular about what you can and can't do, but they're still worth the visit. But Post Town, Shiloh, and then I'm trying to think if there's one more that really sticks out to me.
Have you had a chance to check out the Perryville Battlefield yet?
I haven't done Perryville yet.
We just did a story on that a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like you. I haven't been to a lot of the battlefields. I've been to Gettysburg, but yeah, there's something about the haunted battlefields that are just different than anything else. You know, all the, you know, the reenactors that come across people that they think are reenactors that turn out to be, you know, spirits or whatever. And Perryville's got lots of stories. So I would imagine that'd be a pretty fun place to check out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we go off of this idea that especially traumatic experiences could be enough to keep something in a given spot. And, you know, I believe that, but, like, that makes me wonder. I had this conversation with Adam Kimmel, who owns Madison Seminary Fairfield and partly owns Indiana State. But, you know, I told him, I was like, you know, the more I get into this, the more I question, why do I think a cemetery would be haunted? Right, because we go off of this idea that, you know, residual hauntings, whether traumatic or, like, positive emotional responses to locations are enough to keep people there. Like, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be buried, and unless you've got a pre-purchase plot, you're not going to know where you're going to be buried. You know, that's my thing, is if I was a spirit and I had that energy to essentially move in that sense, why would I want to go watch my body sit in a hole in the ground that I've never seen in my life?
So, same thing I've always said. It never makes, unless you were killed in a cemetery, you've really got no reason to hang around there.
Well, and I told Adam, I said, you know, I do believe that people do things in cemeteries to conjure activity, you know, because I know people that have gone and done Ouija boards in cemeteries, and they don't do things properly, and then all of a sudden they have stuff happening to them. You know, I have those weird stories that people give me, but, you know, personally, I just don't feel that a cemetery would be haunted. You know, even if you were a lonely individual, I feel like you would go to so much, there's so many better options than sitting there looking at rocks in the ground. So somebody, you know, that's just, I don't know.
Somebody brought up to me that in some cases you have, let's say somebody's spouse passes away, mm-hmm. and they spend a big part of the rest of their life visiting that cemetery on a regular basis to feel close to their spouse, that it's possible when they pass, because they've spent so much time there, that would be a natural place to come back. But I still think that's few and far between.
Well, even with that, you know, because that is it really the place that is giving them that comfort, or the fact that they feel closer to their spouse?
Right.
So, you know, in my eyes, why would they not find their spouse and be wherever their spouse is? Now, granted, I don't really know how that all plays out.
Right.
I don't think any of us do. But, you know, that would be my thought, is it's not necessarily the location that has kept, you know, that energy there. It's the idea of that person being there that has done that. But, you know, it's just like when you go home and you've lived in a home for how many years and you've had people pass in and out of your home, you know, you can almost feel those people at times in the home, regardless if they're buried somewhere else. So,
right.
You know, I definitely would still stick with the argument that I just feel that there's so many better places that we could rest. If that's how it goes, then a cemetery.
So, Claudia, I got to ask you this. You are a younger guy. How long have you been paranormal investigating?
So I've been doing it for about 4 years now. It's definitely a field that people look at you kind of funny whenever you're really young, just because I tell people this, and it's, you know, there's a lot of experience to be had in this field, but, you know, it's all theory, right? There's no experts in theory, because to be an expert, there'd have to be some basis of fact. And we don't necessarily have a lot of facts to work off of in what we do. Now, what we do have is a lot of ways to try and communicate with things that we can't see or necessarily feel. But, you know, my biggest thing is I'm 23 years old. I've got a degree in criminal justice with a concentration in homeland security and liberal arts. I was literally sitting in the desk of a politician in Tennessee as his executive assistant. And then all of a sudden, my content that I decided to start posting, because I'd been investigating before then, but I started posting it, and all of a sudden it just took off. But, you know, with this field, we get caught up in names, in celebrity status, because somebody tells us that we should care to watch somebody's stuff. Whereas you could have better ideas than anyone on the best TV show, but just because you're not in that role, you're not seen as an expert. So I definitely think this field is archaic in the mindset of we've kind of built this basis of knowledge that everything that has come before us is accurate and true. And I just don't necessarily think that's the case. I think there's a lot of things that you could have a little bit more strict criticisms on, and even try different methods in the mindset of it's all theory, because we don't have any fact to work off of, like I said.
Right.
So, you know, that's where my mindset, I think, differs from a lot of people, is I think you can be very experienced, especially, you know, you have people that have been doing this for decades. They could be experienced in the fact that they've gone to so many different places, but, you know, you could do something wrong for 25 years. You know, just because you've been doing something for 25 years doesn't mean you could be doing something right or wrong for 25 years.
Right.
So I just try and have an open mind. And I love getting into theory with folks, because then you can kind of see that passion come out in people, because then you're kind of digging past that ground level of, you know, the equipment's going off. Well, let's dig a little bit deeper and see, like, what we actually believe is causing this to happen.
Do you use any of your criminal justice background? Does that ever come in handy in what you're doing now? Is there times where a theory that maybe you learned, or a way of thinking that you learned, can give a different viewpoint on ghost hunting?
Well, one that comes to mind is, if you think about the paranormal, what's one thing that we always include with episodes, TV shows, or anything? It's always eyewitness accounts. Which, you know, in the paranormal, once you have that experience, that makes you a believer, you have that experience. And, you know, you believe for the rest of your life. But the problem that I have is once you start diving into the details of experiences, they become flawed. Because, you know, one of the least credible sources of information in a court of law is eyewitness accounts. Because your mind essentially may only have three pieces of the puzzle, but it'll fill in a 15-piece puzzle.
Right.
I think we fall victim to that in the paranormal of where, you know, my ovulus says this, this happened, and then this other thing happened on my K2 meter. And then our mind tries to connect dots that may not necessarily have a correlation. And I think once you have that and you have these eyewitness accounts of what people are expecting to find at locations or things that they've seen at locations, I think you could have a pretty flawed picture in a very short amount of time. So, you know, I don't use a ton of my criminal justice background in any other sense other than just having kind of a more open mind and trying not to connect dots that may not necessarily be there in terms of painting a clear picture.
But see, that's interesting because that's something obviously you've learned is that, you know, like I've heard for years that eyewitness accounts are only, you know, a certain percent completely accurate because things change or their memory is a little bit off or as years go or even days go by, their memory changes a little bit from what they thought they saw. So it's, you've used that knowledge to initially, you know, turn around and say, hey, just because somebody said it happened this way doesn't mean it actually happened 100% that way. And I think in the paranormal world, even the skeptics out there, they tend to still, they want to believe so much that they don't take the emotion out of it. And they, oh, well, this happened. They said this happened. So how do you explain that? Well, you can explain it by maybe it didn't exactly happen like that. Maybe it wasn't quite as crystal clear as the picture was painted. So that's a good way to be able to look at it and to be able to stay a little more neutral on what may or may not have happened.
Well, and, you know, I think when you start researching locations, especially before you go, you have a tendency to be a slightly bit more biased because then you're looking for these certain things compared to just kind of being open to what's there. So a lot of times, you know, Johan will have the backstory of the location, but I just kind of go in knowing nothing, not because of any other reason other than I want to eliminate me looking for answers.
Right.
So if you think about auto-suggestion, there's so many people in the paranormal field that fall victim to this where, you know, you run a birth session and, you know, you hear something and then you say that you heard it and then you tell other people what you heard. They're going to start hearing that regardless if it's there or not. And like even with Estes, so Estes method can still kind of be that way. So what I've actually been doing with my Estes method is I call it the Kalani method. It's not Kalani method. It's just Estes method with a twist. But I essentially have found a way to run an SB7 and an SB11 off of the same sweep rate and frequency. So I'll run it on AM and we'll run them either forward and reverse on both devices. But I essentially hook one up to an external speaker and one of them, same noise canceling headphones on the individual. But what that does is it gives, in my case, the viewer an opportunity to actually hear the same things that I'm hearing. They hear what I say, and then they can try and decipher if there's actually anything there. The reason I added that, a big component, of kind of what makes me a little bit different is I am huge into ethical investigations and transparency. Because there's plenty of people out there that will make stuff happen in that sense. And, you know, that's not why I got into this. I got into this because I had an experience when I was 11 and I want to try and find a reason why. And I think, you know, if we go to these places and we have to make things happen to hit view marks, then we've completely defeated the purpose of even going to the place.
Can you tell us about your situation you had when you were 11, your experience?
Yeah. So like I said, you know, at Shiloh, and again, going off the idea that the details could be flawed a little bit just because I'm remembering something from that long, but I definitely remember seeing a little boy, my guess would probably be about 8, and he was in the gray uniform. I mean, everything was to a T. Like I thought he was a reenactor because of how accurate the reenactors try and get their uniforms. And when he turned around and looked at me, like I said, he was very dirty. He was very, It just looked like he was out of place. It looked like he was in the wrong time. And, you know, when we had that experience, I ended up asking my buddy, I'm like, man, did that happen last night? Like, am I dreaming? And he looked at me and he's like, it happened. Now, he's got a lot of issues now, and I'm not saying they stem from that, but it definitely was that eye-opening moment that once you have that first experience with anything paranormal, it's kind of hard to deny that there's something else out there. Now, finding the yellow brick road to get to that connecting point is the mystery for all of us, but it's definitely enough to keep you going.
When you do your live streams, are they typically, how long would you say? 45 minutes, hour, hour and a half?
No. So when I first started, they would usually be about 8 hours, ranging from about 8 p.m. to about 4 a.m., sometimes sooner, sometimes later. Now I only do about 4 hours, but it's hard because you have to assume that no one knows anything. They don't know what kind of equipment I'm using. They don't know what I'm doing. They don't know where I'm at. It's a lot of repetition. It's a lot of here's where I'm at. So that's why I started doing the post-produced videos, is so that, you know, I didn't have to keep saying that over and over again. I could just say it once, record it, and then put it in a video. But I've definitely had, I think my longest stream was like 15 hours.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's a lot of work, I will say, because you're not entertaining in the sense of you have to make anything happen, but like you have to essentially think in your mind, like, why are these people going to spend 2 hours of their day watching me? So like I sing, I'm pretty stupid at times. And once I get delirious, like from the lack of sleep, is when the show really picks up and people start laughing, because you never know what's going to come out of my mouth.
I have seen you doing some singing. You were, I think in a hospital, getting on an elevator with singing Daisy. So that was a short TikTok video that I saw. It was only like a minute long, but you were, it seemed like you were having fun. And I'm surprised that elevator worked, because it looked like it was pretty old.
When you go to College Hill, try that elevator out. It is like incredibly smooth for how old that thing is. You literally hit the button, close the door, hit the button. And it is faster and more efficient than the elevators we got today.
I'll tell you one that's not like that is the hotel in Point Pleasant. Well, that thing, I got in that elevator and it scared me to death, that the old hotel, the man, it was jerking and stopping. And we were only on like the third floor. And I'm like, oh my God, I think I'll just take the steps next time.
Yeah. College Hill. So I went, the first time I went was in the summer. And let me tell you, that place gets hot. So I'm climbing up and down these four flights of stairs. And that was before they had the elevator fixed. And man, I probably lost 5 pounds of just water weight that night. But
oh, wow.
When you go in the incinerator room, they still have ashes from the, you know, the limbs that they would burn in there. If you go in the summertime, which you said you're going in August, right?
Yes.
If you go when it's hot outside, you walk into that room, you will not forget that stench.
Ah. It great. Is, that's something to look forward to.
It is horrible because it heats up all of that equipment or all of that hardware, and it still has that smell.
Ooh, that's something I wouldn't even plan it on, but now it's going to be stuck in my head and my nose. But Kalani, it's been a blast having you on. And I know you've got some events that are going to be taking place. Tell me, you said you got one going on in Lynchburg, Tennessee, correct?
Yeah, so we have one going on in Lynchburg, Tennessee, and what's actually interesting about this one is, again, Johan set it up for me, but it's going to be May 13th and 14th, and it's going to be at the old Lynchburg Jail and the funeral home down there owned by Tennessee Paranormal. I think they're also doing a walk, and so one of the packages I think has like some free t-shirts and stuff, so it's going to be a really good event. I've actually been to that jail. That jail has held Jack Daniels before. You know, it's a really unique place, and you know, I'm excited to be able, this is my first, I guess, public investigation that I've done with people. So there's a lot of people that are looking forward to coming out and experience my madness in person.
Yeah, I think Lynchburg's where they make Jack Daniels, right?
It is.
So it's, you know, very subpar compared to Kentucky whiskey, but you know, that's just me.
I'm not diving into that. I don't have a dog in that fight.
So how can everybody find out the best way to keep up with Kalani Ghost Hunter? Where can they go to?
So if you go to www.kalanighosthunter.com, it should give you all of the links to every social media I'm on. I'm on pretty much all of them, either under Kalani Ghost Hunter or Kalani Ghost for the ones that won't let me type my whole name out. So you can find me there.
And that's K-A-L-A-N-I. So
yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So my dad's Hawaiian, my mom's white. So it's an interesting mix. I've had so many butcherings of my name in my lifetime. I've gotten it all from everybody, so I'm used to it.
So have you delved into the Hawaiian folklore or any of that with having a father that's...
The Hawaiian folklore is a trip. I actually did an investigation over there it's called right off of Pali Highway, which if you've ever been to Hawaii, all of the locals will tell you, like even my family told me, you know, you don't go to Pali Highway at night because there is the lore that King Kamehameha's soldiers will march the march that they marched back when they first got onto the island of Oahu from the top of Pali Highway down to the ocean. And if you interrupt their march, the lore is you get killed, especially if you don't have any native blood. It's like you don't go out there. Like that's the lore. But anyways, I'm right off of Pali Highway in a spot called Morgan's Corner. So Morgan's Corner is haunted because there was two, or rumored to be haunted, I should say. There was two inmates that got out of the correctional facility and then actually brutally murdered an elderly woman and tortured her and crazy stuff like that. So this is the spot I went to, but I'm doing an investigation and I hear drums beating out of the woods. And I'm in the middle of a rainforest. You can't even see your hand. That's how dense it was. And I was like, okay, this is what I was asking for, but it was pretty awesome. And there's also another part of Hawaiian lore, which my grandmother, who was full-blooded, is the Minnehunis, which the Minnehunis are like these little men that are up in the mountains, and they'll come down and they like terrorize you. And like, she thought that they would come and steal her keys. Like, oh, grandma can't find her keys. The Minnehunis must've come and took them. Like Hawaiian lore is very interesting. There's so much to it, but those are probably my two favorite ones. But there's definitely a cultural aspect that they have so much invested into spirituality and kind of, you know, believing that the land has power, that mana. But it's definitely a nice mix to have that when you throw in the paranormal stuff, because, you know, you go over there and you talk to people, they almost all believe in ghosts and spirits and the paranormal, but they don't ever want to delve into it. Like, they've been warned, you don't want to mess with this stuff. So it's funny because they've got their unique ways of telling me I don't need to do it.
We've talked about some pretty cool police stories from over there dealing with the paranormal on the, you know, locking gates that are appear to be coming unlocked at these parks and having visitors just appear out of nowhere, and they put them in the back of the car and then go to the next gate that needs to be locked, and then the visitor disappears. And it's just some pretty cool stuff from over there.
Well, and I have a clip that I posted a while ago, but I may need to kind of resurface it again, from the old Triple C, the correctional facility, which is supposed to be very haunted, but it's still the active facility, so you obviously can't go in and do an investigation. But I have a source. I'm not gonna name this person, but this source got me this footage from where what looks like to be a white mist moving in their control room, and it's very slow, and it has the shape of a woman, but it looks like a nurse that would have been there, you know, 30, 40 years earlier. Now, that video has never made it out other than me posting it, but it was definitely an interesting one once you hear the stories about old Triple C.
Awesome. Brother, it's been a blast having you on. I thank you so much. Everybody go to KalaniGhostHunter.com. You can see everything and every bit of social media that Kalani's on. Definitely check out his TikTok. You can be part of the 1.3 million following he posts on there on a regular basis, and it's all fun little clips. So go check it out.
Appreciate you having me on, Jerry. You have a good rest of your night.
All right, brother. You too.
Thank you.
All right, Tracy, that wraps up this week. We hope everybody enjoyed the situation, and we hope to meet a lot of you next week at the Louisville show.
Yes, you guys, we are so excited and hope you guys can come out and just have some fun and hang out.
Absolutely. It's going to be a blast, and we get to help some veterans out at the VFW post.
Yes, we do, and we love that more than anything. We hope you guys have a blessed week. Love ya.
Don't miss Scarpetta, a propulsive new crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis, Emmy winner Bobby Cannavale, with Emmy nominee Simon Baker, and Academy Award winner Ariana DeBose. Scarpetta follows Dr. Kay Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman, a brilliant and no-nonsense chief medical examiner, as she investigates a haunting murder that strangely parallels her first major case from decades earlier. Is the case that made her the case that breaks her? Based on the best-selling novels by Patricia Cornwell, Scarpetta is both a crime thriller and messy family drama that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Get ready to hunt a serial killer in this satisfying series with terrifying twists and an ending you won't see coming. Watch all episodes of Scarpetta on March 11th, only on Prime Video.